dressing room pump up mix.
Right. Yeah. All right. Who's going to listen to this nonsense? Nobody. Nobody's going to tune in to hear this.
Okay.
What I'm saying is we should all step up our game a little bit.
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, it's kind of you I was focusing on, Adam, because Don and I are banging on all cylinders.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 354 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam.
Or are you actually there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. But even more important, with us as sometimes is
Don in Barrie, Ontario.
You're from Barrie?
Yeah. Well, originally from Sudbury, but I've lived here for a while.
Oh. I thought you were from Medicine Hat.
Not quite. It's,
is that in Ontario?
I've been there, though. No, it is not, I don't think. I think that's out in the prairies somewhere.
Is that near Winnipeg?
I didn't know this was going to be a geography lesson. I'm going to say
I'm familiar with the coast and then also the other coast like Halifax, and that's in the middle. We just fly over it.
A little bit of Medicine Hat trivia. That's where Trevor Linden played his junior hockey.
Yes, he did. The Tigers.
The Tigers, that's right.
See, I betrayed my own bit there by pretending that I didn't know anything about Medicine Hat, yet I knew the name of the team. So thus, I've been caught in a lie.
Okay.
Well, we're off to a raging start. Don, how first of all, Adam, things are good?
Yeah.
Great. All right. More importantly, Don, how are you?
I'm great, sleep deprived, because my daughter is 16 months old right now and teething, and my wife is working nights.
16 months. Hang on a second. Let me do the metric math on that. That's a year and a half almost.
Closing in on that, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of sleepless nights and then days where I'm looking after her when she's not at daycare. So it's been a challenge, being productive. And, I don't know. I've got a feeling that I will never be as productive as I once was. But I'm okay with that.
You just wait until you have two kids, said every jerk in the world.
It might happen. It might not. We're not planning on another one at this point. But
no, I can't stand those people who just completely take what you said and oh yeah, that's nothing. That is nothing. Will you have two kids? I hate those guys.
Well, you know, so, and I look at the people that have like twins or triplets even, and I'm like, you poor souls. I have no idea how. I mean, it might be. I'm assuming that if one is, say, 3 or 4 years old and you have another one, then there's a certain level of autonomy with the older one that you wouldn't have if you have them back to back or at the same time. So maybe we'll go that route. Wait until our daughter's a little bit older first before we consider the possibility of adding another one to the family.
This week on the Two Hosers Family Planning Show.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, my advice, if we are on the advice, is have the second one just before the first one is out of diapers. Because if you have a window of no diapers, you are in for a rude awakening when you have to re-diaper. We had a small overlap. Going. Yeah, we had like a 2 week overlap essentially of diapers, and. Now we're all good. So that's the one positive to having twins or triplets, I would imagine. I know it is probably you never sleep again, well, for at least for the first 7 years. And then, but you're done the diapers all at once.
True enough.
Trade off.
Hey, this is a photography podcast, right?
But how is the kid? Have you photographed the heck out of the kid or what?
You know what? Most of the images that we take, are just like snapshots with our cell phone because she's doing something cute at that time and you don't want to miss the moment. But mm-hmm. I have done a few staged shots, yeah, for her birthday this year. Got her on a little toy train outside amongst the roses, and we got this little riding train that was mine, given to me on my first birthday, and it's now hers. And so we did some fun photography there. But yeah, maybe about once a season we get out and do like a really nice staged shoot. But mm-hmm. the rest of it, we found just that moment where if 30 seconds go by, it's gone. The cell phone becomes the perfect tool for that.
We had to cut there. I'll be honest with the listeners. Don was telling us a nice story about the occasional photo shoot, the occasional season-themed photo shoot. Like, for instance, Thanksgiving, I'm guessing. Or not Thanksgiving.
Last year, we put her in a pumpkin for Halloween, which was hilarious. And I was
wondering if you're going to do that again.
I don't know. I mean, it's been done, right? So I don't think that I'm going to do the same thing, but maybe get her. Maybe a nice pile of leaves, right? So, you know, we'll switch it up a little bit this year.
Word to the wise, though, lots of slugs in those piles of leaves. Just heads up.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that, and I won't pass that news on to my wife and daughter.
Mm-hmm. Do not. Yeah, unless they're French, and then they'll just eat them. All right.
Okay.
My next thing on the note, well, no, I just had a friend who just got back from Paris, and she just a couple times had the escargot. I'm not doing that. I don't care if you guys eat slugs and
I tried it once. I never again.
Yeah, that's the appropriate response to that. When in Rome, try it, and then be like, oh, man, I should have tried it in France. That would be better. But P.S., never again. So I saw you on the news, Don.
Was I on the news?
I think it was the news. It could have been. It was the internet, so I'm assuming that was the news.
Yes, I was interviewed by my local CTV news, and they were covering the fact that I have a new snowflake coin out. And they did a little minute and a half piece on that here in my studio. So that was kind of fun.
So, Adam, if you're keeping score at home, which I know you do, that is in terms of designs on a $20 coin with the Canadian Mint, that's Don 2 and you and I combined for none.
Okay, 2-0. We can make a comeback.
It's not too late. I'm just probably not going to do snowflakes. I don't know if they want, you know, pictures of my kid at the playground, but they might.
They did a series of illustrations of kids playing in the winter.
We missed it.
Oh, man. Fumbled that one. No, I saw the video, though. That was really cool, Don. And we're going to post that, the link, on our site, so our listeners should go ahead and have a listen there. How do we get the coin?
How do you get the coin?
Mint.ca, and look for ice. I think they called it the Ice Crystals 2018 coin. Or go into your local post office, and there is a chance that they will have one in the little display case that they usually have there.
Now, they're a limited edition, right?
Yes, 6,000 are being produced. Now, that was the same edition run of the previous one, and it sold out. So here's hoping that this one does the same.
But they don't make more after that. The 6,000 is done. There's no reprint.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So I would assume that they don't make all 6,000 at once in case like the design is just a complete flop. But they will make up to 6,000 and never one more than that.
Okay.
And what is that going to set you back? It's not $20, is it?
I wish it was. No, I mean, these limited edition silver coins definitely have a price tag higher than their face value. So it's $113.95, I think, for the coin. Now, thankfully, that's no tax and free shipping. But yeah, it's not something that you're going to go and spend.
Exactly. That's kind of the point. But do they send you one?
No.
Wow. They make you buy one?
Wow.
Well, you know, and to be fair, I completely understand that some of the coins that they produce, they've got like a $75,000 price tag. And you can't exactly give one of those to the creator of it, to the designer of the reverse face of it. So I think it's an all or nothing thing, and clearly it can't be all. So, you know, I understand that.
Right. But they didn't pay you for this.
Oh, they paid me well to design the coin, and I just take a small bit of that, and I buy one from that payment. So,
right. Great. So, yeah, check out the link to that video on our site, and go to mint.ca if you're interested in getting it. It's actually a great looking coin. Well, the first one was last year as well, and this one looks fantastic.
And I'm assuming that you don't own the first one and you're not going to buy the second one, Alan.
Oh, no, no. I don't have 113.95 kicking around. Do they ship to Germany? I'll find out.
I don't know if they do, but I'm sure you could find them on eBay or something and get an international seller to bring them to you. But let's not belabor this coin thing too much. Let's talk about what I wanted to jump on the podcast.
We will get into that. But first, yeah. If you are going to buy one of Don's coins, look for it. I'm not saying it's there, but look for it on Amazon. And if you do, click through our site and help us out. Got that out of the way, Adam.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. In the category of what's going on, what is going on? We got what's going on with Don? What's going on with Adam?
It's nice here. It was beautiful. We had Thanksgiving last weekend, and I went over to Vancouver Island, spent some time with my parents and the family, and it was my dad's 70th birthday, so that was exciting. Oh, and as a photography tie-in, figured out another way to shoot a birthday cake photo that works quite nicely. You may have tried this before. Okay. So sliding glass door, table, this is evening, sort of early evening, because, you know, you have cake after dinner. Bring the birthday cake and the table very close to the window and the sliding glass door. My parents happen to have a deck outside of the sliding glass door that leads out to the barbecue and like an area where they have a table outside and all that. Stand outside, use a long lens, zoom in, and then you basically get the nice fall off from the window light, and you also get a nice kind of candlelight that can, you know, create that sort of dark illuminated look, but doing it all with window light. So haven't done this before. Usually use the LED light to light the birthday cake photo, but this worked really well. You can put this together in your head, right? Like what I'm describing. I painted a word picture there.
Yeah, we don't need to see that photo.
Okay, all right.
Is what you're getting at. I understand. Do not post. I'm not going to post it.
And the other thing we added to the photo, which is always a nice touch for the birthday cake photo, is the sparklers.
Yes, that looks good on camera.
Love the sparklers. Yeah.
But you didn't go for a birthday pumpkin pie, huh?
No, we did not. We went to a Dutch bakery, and we got an amazing birthday cake. It was all fall decorated, all fall colors, yeah.
Great. Good job.
So that's it. That's it. There you go. Window light birthday cake photo. Try it. Anybody out there with an upcoming birthday for a child or a parent or themselves, possibly.
We also celebrated Thanksgiving here. But I wasn't doing my wife's vegetarian, and so is my my mother-in-law, and we're not going to do a whole turkey. That's a lot of bird kicking around. So one of the things that really takes me, you know, back to my childhood, and we've never made before, my wife's never made before, is cabbage rolls. Very Canadian,
sure, or European, is it?
Yeah, well, I mean my mother-in-law loves making cabbage rolls, and she's Bulgarian, so
yeah, that's where I would have put it from, as Hungarian or something Bulgarian. Sure, I don't know the difference, but
Ukrainian usually. I mean, depends.
Yeah, Ukraine. That's right, Ukrainian for sure.
My grandmother also Ukrainian. Well, I mean, she married my grandfather, who's Ukrainian. But anyhow, it's semantics. My grandmother's cabbage rolls are to die for. They are absolutely fantastic. So yes, I had to get that in there.
That was exactly why. That's why I brought it up, because like especially in the middle of Canada, like you'll find out, here's some more Canada lessons for everybody, that there's a lot of immigrants a long time ago who came from the Ukraine and other parts of Europe and settled in the middle of Canada. So that if you were to go to, let's say, an IHOP, International House of Pancakes, which is a chain restaurant of pancakes across, I assume, North America, like America, yes. You know, the U.S.
It
and
is
Canada.
In the U.S. as well, yeah.
But if you were to walk into the one in Vancouver or in Dallas, Texas, or wherever, and ask for pierogies and eggs, you're going to be out of luck. In Saskatoon or Regina, it is the first thing on the menu because of the Ukrainian influence. It's very popular there, and thus that's why, to me, cabbage rolls and pierogies are a very Canadian. We've adopted them from the Ukraine and the region. but it's very, very popular. And so that's what we made. My wife made cabbage rolls for the first time ever, and they were also fantastic, just really amazing. And then we also made homemade pierogies as well.
Can I say one other thing about cabbage rolls, though? I think it falls under that list of things that could not be more disgusting in the mind of a child and more delectable in the mind of an adult. It's a weird kind of
yes.
food that, for whatever reason, it's the cabbage part, I guess. And just, hey, this is all wrapped in cabbage and sauce. It's so unnerving to a child's mind, I find. But again, turn 18 and I could not eat enough of these.
My kids followed my exact playbook from when I was their same age as them and just ate the insides.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or the meat. Yeah. Eat the meat.
Yeah. It was just the meat and the rice. And that was my move. But stayed away from the cabbage, but not this time. Anyways, that was what we did. All right. Just a quick reminder, the monthly challenge for October is fall colors. I don't know about you, Adam, or Don, but we're not quite there yet. We're seeing it. I can see it on the horizon, but they're not quite there.
I think for the most part, they're just going to go from green to brown here. Mm-hmm. So I might find some isolated pockets where like one tree decides to actually turn red. And then I'll go steal some leaves from that and strategically place it into a photo shoot. But
and Vancouver?
Yeah, it's kind of, I wouldn't call it full blown autumn. That's a new term I just invented too. Full blown autumn.
FBA.
I'm sort of feeling like Don. I don't know that we're going to get the full spectrum that we would normally expect, just because of the weird seasons that we've had and the lack of rain. And so I'm hoping it shows up, but I'm a little bit on the cautious side to think I'm going to get a mind blowing colorful autumn shot.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't happen every year necessarily. All right, did anybody shoot anything interesting this week?
My challenge photo, but we're going to get to that later. I had never done ultraviolet work of a person before, and it was kind of an interesting challenge. So I'll save that because we're going to dig into all that later. But experimentation. And I've got one idea coming up that I just didn't have the time to explore yesterday. Was I bought a fog machine that has a little a chamber inside where you're supposed to fill up with ice cubes so that it chills it and creates this really nice low-lying fog. I thought it would be a nice thing to have around for Halloween, but imagine if you could like do some creative lighting for close-up like studio macro photography with fog, giving some atmosphere and depth and revealing where the lighting is coming from, etc. So there's going to be some fun experiments with that, I think, while we still have some flowers in the garden.
I've actually read an online tutorial about how to add that later on, like with dry ice or something like that, and it sounds pretty cool. Mine is not built in, but it does sound like a very cool effect.
Yeah.
We went to – I mentioned on the last show that we were heading off to Lake Constance, also known in Germany as Bodensee. It's just a big, giant lake that is bordered by Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. So we went there for a couple days, and I said hey, I'm going to post some pictures of that. Well, actually, Adam asked if I would post some, you know, take some pictures.
Sure.
And I did, but I did something that is very non-me, is I took the 5D Classic and only took the 17-40 lens. I generally like to shoot everything at like either a 50 mil or an 85, as we've talked about probably a million times on this show. But I said, you know what, since we're talked about wide-angle stuff, I'm only going to take the wide-angle lens and shoot the whole thing that way. And kind of had fun with it. Didn't really miss the 85. So as I said, I'm just going to post a couple pictures. Don't have to go into great detail on them. But generally, you can see the three pictures I posted there would not have got this perspective had I brought the 85.
Okay.
And like sometimes you want to have the atmosphere around the subject, you know, to get a better feel of, you know, the surroundings and the environment.
I do. But oftentimes I hedge my bets and usually I'll bring the 85 with me and go, well, you know, in case I get that perfect, you know, portrait shot.
You just leave the 85 on the camera the whole time, right?
Exactly. So I kind of forced myself to take these shots and got a bunch of, you know, different looking shots. And for us to go down to the Bodensee isn't tremendously, you know, isn't a mission. It's a couple, you know, hour and a half or something like that. So we'll go again. But there's the one of my daughter and the ferry that we took. My son chasing bubbles in the in old Europe there. And then the last one was almost my photo challenge, but I purposely didn't use it. My kids on the merry-go-round. So it's for you guys and most of our listeners, you can figure out really quickly how I did this. A lot of people who aren't photo savvy asked if it was photoshopped or how I did that, but I'm guessing you guys have a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing it in the email here, but I'm assuming if you got a merry-go-round, then I'm assuming that the merry-go-round is clear and the surrounding is blurry, which means that you or the camera is on the merry-go-round with your child, right?
That is correct. I sat there and got a little bit merry-go-round sick, but totally worth it in the end. Well, it didn't throw up, but you know I could see it from where I was standing. But anyway, so I'll post all those three just because you brought it up last week. All right, photo challenge this week was wide-angle portrait. And as is tradition, we're going to let the guests go first. Let's have a look at Dawn's.
Sure. This is probably the nerdiest photo that I've taken of myself, bar none.
No way. That's not yourself. I thought that was Hasselhoff. Isn't it?
Well, young. Young Hasselhoff.
Like, but I was like, how did Don get David Hasselhoff to pose for his photo? That's unbelievable.
1984 Hasselhoff.
Yeah, that's full Hasselhoff.
In his Terminator audition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hoff is back.
So Alan asked for some cover art for this episode, and he suggested that I do a self-portrait in ultraviolet. And I have an ultraviolet lens.
I didn't say self-portrait. I just said, hey, did I say self-portrait? Yes, I did.
I think you did, yeah. So I listened, and I've got a couple of lenses that have very good ultraviolet transmission properties. One of them is a 28mm lens. So I figured, hey, that kind of hits two birds with one stone here. And so this is just me in my studio. I'm wearing glasses that are normally clear. They're ultraviolet protection goggles or safety eyewear. So whenever you're doing experiments in ultraviolet, these are on your face. But I realized that they would be completely black in the image because they're not letting the UV stuff through. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to be wearing these giant black glasses. Let's throw on a leather jacket and let's grab a camera lens and something that's somewhat complex, which is a macro lens from the 1970s, and just make it kind of look like a gun or some sort of weapon of sorts and just totally own the look. It worked.
It did. I like it. It's a lot going on here. I don't know if I asked for a UV self-portrait, but I'm glad you did this because this is not – I don't have one of these.
Now it's shot relatively wide open, and it's at ISO 6400 in order to get enough ultraviolet light for my flashes to make this work. So I was pushing some extremes in order to make the image happen, and there's a fair bit of post processing to bring out some details, converting it to black and white, and even some of the liquify tool I had to use because my arm in the foreground was closer to the camera and looked rather gargantuan compared to my body, which you know will happen with a wide angle lens if you've got some elements much closer to the camera. So I had to use the liquify tool just to reproportion the arm to the face and everything else. But it wasn't too difficult to make it work.
Ladies love big arms though.
Yeah, I was gonna say how did you make your face look so much like a young David Hasselhoff?
I wish I could offer an explanation to that, but maybe it's just the magic of ultraviolet.
Okay. No, Adam, to clear up what Adam is asking, is this Knight Rider or early Baywatch? I'm assuming by the leather jacket, this is Michael Knight.
Yeah, this is Knight Rider for sure.
unless he's that evil Hasselhoff who rolled
the other. Oh, the big rig Hasselhoff.
The big rig one, and then there was the Kit. Obviously, was a good car, and then there was Carr, K-A-R-R. So, Don, you know, a lot of.
At first, I took this as a compliment, but as we now start to describe it in detail, it's becoming less and less so.
I disagree. He's one of the biggest stars. He brought the Berlin Wall down, Don.
Yeah, no, he's a big star.
He's a big. I'm looking for freedom. That's the song. You don't even know his song. It's huge over here. I'm looking for freedom. I think it's called. I could do worse than the Hoff. If we back out that hamburger on the floor video, Hoff is bulletproof. Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm glad you liked my experiment.
I did. I'm glad.
It is a very cool looking photo.
How many of these are on the internet now? Going to be one, and that's about it. So that's awesome. No, I appreciate the effort. All right,
thank
Adam.
You.
Yes.
Which one are you doing? Your wife or your or fake Richard Attenborough?
No, we're doing my wife.
Okay, tell us what's going on here. Now you did not liquefy.
I did not. I was going for the disproportionate. I that's why I included the one of my dad, because almost similar perspective, not shot up, slightly closer to the subject with the photo of my wife. So my dad's looks more like a normal perspective versus the one of my wife. I kind of wanted the out of proportion.
Under thighs.
Yeah, I wanted to look, but that was the kind of trick, was to shoot up, number one, which we don't typically do with portrait photography, and it's not the most pleasing angle, and to try to make it not look, you know, displeasing. I don't know, is that the right word? I mean, I'm very close to the subject in this case. I'm shooting from below. I wanted to use the rocks and the, like, this is, I don't know, to probably 200 meters from my parents' house. So there's a little, they're kind of close to the end of a street where you basically go down a set of these kind of weird stairs that people have constructed. And then you go right down to this little beach and the tide is way in. And so we're right kind of along the edge. The water is well, you can see in the picture of my dad is very, very close to the rocks. And so there's not much room to work here, but I got a nice sky and I thought, okay, I'm going to get down low. I'm going to use the rocks to kind of, you know, frame this image and rule of thirds. And yeah, I think it's 19 millimeters. I have that 19 to 35, that cheap knockoff lens from China that comes in handy for a shot like this. And there you go. That's pretty much it. Rule of thirds.
Okay. Don, you go first.
Yeah. Well, the sky is great in this image. You know, it's a nice accent. And I just, if the, I'm just, the tree line loading up to the sky almost has a bit of a white halo around it, like it's been overprocessed or the sky has been replaced or something like that. So that the processing gives it away that something's been done to the sky to make it look so good. But I do enjoy it. If the face and the expression was more in the open sky versus just kind of on the edge of where the trees are, I think it might give a little bit more isolation there and help the shot a bit. And a bit of burning on the rock on the right-hand side, just to tone that down a little bit so that it's not the brightest part of the frame. But the pose and the positioning and everything else I really like about the photograph. It's just a little bit of extra elbow grease to make it shine.
Mm-hmm. I agree with everything you said there. Absolutely.
Did you overprocess the sky?
No, I did very little. I just, again, a little bit of saturation and a little bit of bringing down the blues. That's all I did to this image. There is really nothing done to it. So it might just be the crappy lens that I have that I took this photo with, but no, very, very little processing at all done.
Yeah. I'd like to, I mean, while we're criticizing, I'd like to see the horizon line either be more out of whack or straight.
Okay.
To
True
me,
enough,
that's,
yeah,
it's,
I,
it's a couple,
I, that,
couple
I looked
threes.
At that as well. Again, in all honesty, did not, this is pretty close to straight out of camera and done 5 minutes before we went on the air. So yeah, didn't put a ton of time in. It's still, I like the photo, and I my favorite part of it is the sky. I do like the pose. And that's the thing about wide angle and trying to pose. Number one, a female subject is tough because you know they're going to be critical of themselves in the best of times, let alone shooting from below with a very close with a super wide angle, you want it to be as, I guess, pleasing to their form as possible. So this is a good pose for anyone trying to do that, like the one leg up and this and the angle. Otherwise, they look distorted and big and they're not going to like it. And my wife would not mm-hmm. let me post anything that was, you know, not flattering, let's say.
I like the photo of your dad a little bit better, actually. But yeah, was that one taken later?
It was taken maybe 15 minutes later. He showed up, but it could be taken with any lens. That was the reason I didn't post that one. That unless you knew exactly where I was and you knew that I couldn't really back up because there's nowhere for me to go, this could have been taken with any lens. And I kind of thought, all right, for wide angle, I better really, you know, accentuate the wide angle. But I included this because this is more of an environmental portrait. This is right where my dad lives. This is where he goes probably 5 out of 7 days, and he kind of walks along this beach, and this is his spot. And so I took this photo kind of as, yeah, it's a sort of a 70th birthday photo. This was on his birthday, and you see how close the water is to the edge. But I agree, overall, this is a better photo. I actually used the one of my wife just to hammer home the wide angleness of the first one. Mm-hmm. And I like the sky in the photo of my wife better than the one of my dad. It's just not quite as dramatic.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. It was with that idea in mind that I chose this photo of my son as the my wide angle portrait. Now, I shot an awful lot of made a lot of attempts at shooting a wide angle portrait, and I wanted to do something where I lit it. For some reason, I just wanted to make sure. Not that you had to; that wasn't part of the criteria. But I wanted to, because I don't normally light wide angle shots. But I shot a whole bunch of stuff, you know, down at the Lake Constance, like we talked about, but nothing really, you know, really jumped out. And then a few days ago, the winds really whipped up here. Maybe you heard on the news, probably not. Big storm came through. Everybody had an idea of, hey, we're going to go fly a kite. Everyone's going to go kite flying on this one day. And so in my head, I thought, well, this is perfect. Like, I'm going to get a wide-angle portrait of my son flying a kite with this amazing sky in the background. And, like, I'm going to get him, and I'm going to light him. My wife's going to hold the flash. It's going to be, you know, gelled, of course, with a CTO, so we get an amazing sky. The kite's going to be in the background. You know how that would go? So perspective is just going to be amazing. I'm probably going to win a Pulitzer if they give them for podcasts. I don't know if they do.
Okay.
What a horrible idea that was. Have you ever tried to shoot a picture of your kid flying a kite?
I have, yeah.
And?
I haven't gotten there yet. The kite would take her away. So, but I could imagine that you have so many elements of randomness and chaos that you're faced with. Trying to get anything orderly, it's like winning the lottery.
I can't take a picture of my kid having a nap. Without him messing it up on his own. What made me think of, oh, yeah, let's do this. Let's get the kite. The wind, of course, no problem. This is just a horrible, horrible error. So what I'm saying is don't even bother. Like, how do you shoot kites? Come on. Terrible. So anyways.
Let me give you one insight to kites. The only shot you can get is basically as they're running just to get the kite up. So the kite string is short at this point, and it's kind of a across the frame horizontal. You can get something that way, but as soon as the kite goes up, forget it. Like, you have to be lying on your back and shooting straight up to get everything in the frame.
Yeah. Well, it was a nice wide-angle lens, though. So I was going to take – yeah, I'd get – no problem. Nothing but problems. And there was other people there flying kites. There was adults flying kites. No, so I figured, okay, well, at least I can go photograph an adult flying a kite. That didn't even help. So it was just a complete horrible, horrible idea. But anyway, so the other day, yesterday, in fact, I think we were outside. The sky is just amazing. Different day. The storm is gone. There's no more kites involved. Amazing sky. And my daughter says, Daddy, let's go outside. The sky is awesome. Let's bring your camera. And so I did. But I'm bringing the wide angle, and I'm going to try to shoot a wide angle shot of my kids with the sky. And that's what I ended up doing. So this is the one I grabbed. I basically laid down on my driveway, with the lens probably at 17 mils, firing straight up into the sky. And just in my left hand, I'm holding my flash, my 580 EX2 with a full CTO on it, attached with a cable, so I can do the ETTL. Because I got to be faster. I can't be messing around with off-camera flash. It's got to do a lot of the heavy lifting for me. And that's basically how I shot that left hand extended, fired it up in the sky, and blam, and that's it.
Well, and I like the sky. The fact that it's a wide-angle shot gives you that field of view of the sky, and the texture in the clouds and everything really help the shot come together. I wish you had a sky like Adam did for his photos that was a little bit more dynamic. But that's one of the benefits that you get from a shot like this, because if you were further away, then you would only get a tiny, small section of that, and it'd be very difficult to have that as a dynamic background.
Right. Now, I did shoot some of that. I did shoot a few with the 85 to start with, and then realized, oh, I better grab the wide-angle one here. But back to Adam's point about, you know, the shot of his dad, is that this shot screams wide-angle, which for some reason I wanted to do. I didn't want to kind of halfway it and go, all right, well, maybe it was wide-angle, maybe he backed up, we don't know. I don't know if I love this shot. In fact, I know I don't. Like my son's face looks very goofy, and he's having a lot of fun with it, but the distortion is pretty terrible, actually.
Yeah, but it's a kid making a goofy face. I mean, distortion doesn't hurt that. In fact, it probably enhances it to some degree.
It looks like the Bride of Chucky.
Or that. Well,
yeah. I just want to point out he's a very handsome kid, you know. He's adopted. What are you gonna do? No, I mean maybe it's great. I'll talk to the Canadian Mint and see about next year's $20 coin.
$25 coin.
Yeah, well, obviously I'm not gonna slum it with a 20. So, anyways, I did enjoy shooting with the wide angle lens, but like I said, it shot an awful lot. It was a lot more enjoyable than I would have thought, and I'm gonna keep it in my holster a lot more often. All right, topic this week, in honor of Don being here, well, actually, that is why you're here. Don, you've been shooting a lot of UV.
I have. I made it a summer project to really dive into that subject. And tons of experimentation, a lot of technical challenges along the way. And it's an area of photography that very few people have explored. So it kind of tickled my curiosity in the right ways.
Let's back up, and I want to find out exactly what UV is. And for those of who don't know, I mean, I think everybody knows who Roy G. Biv is, because you've done. I mean, we talked probably a year ago. You had converted one of your cameras to shoot infrared.
That's right, and I've been doing infrared for years, actually. But in the last year, I had a camera converted for full spectrum photography, which the CMOS sensor inside of your camera, you know, that records the image, can record ultraviolet and infrared light, but there's a filter in front of the sensor that blocks that out to limit it to just the same range as human vision. So remove that filter and replace it with one that lets you shoot infrared or ultraviolet, or in the case of the camera that I have, it lets everything in, and I can filter it through by having a filter on the lens itself. And so that allows me to take an image by recording ultraviolet light.
Now, so where is ultraviolet light on the spectrum? That's what I'm getting at is unless I'm way off, infrared's on the one end, UV's on the far extreme.
That's right. So the longer wavelengths are infrared, and then the shorter wavelengths than we can see with our own eyes are ultraviolet. Part of the reason for that is that the lens of our eyes actually block ultraviolet light. And there's a particular procedure that you can have that lens removed, like if you have a cataract or there's some sort of deformity and you need to remove that. Then people can see deeper into the ultraviolet spectrum. Famously, Monet, the famous painter, had cataracts, I believe, and had the lens in his eyes removed, and his paintings all of a sudden became more blue and purple for that period of his career. So right now, normally for every person listening to this, you can't see UV, but a camera can detect it. Insects, however, and some birds can see ultraviolet light, and so there are certain patterns in flowers that exist in ultraviolet that are designed to attract insects. And it's fun to explore that. But in order to do so, you have to have either a lot of ultraviolet light or the right kind of lens, because most lenses, the standard glass that's used in optics, doesn't let ultraviolet light pass through. And so it, the more complex a lens that has like elements glued together and stuff actually perform much worse for ultraviolet. So simpler lenses work better. There are dedicated lenses that cost like $8,000 that are made of quartz that work perfectly for this, but I don't have that kind of a budget yet for this. So I've been using some antique lenses, actually, some really old model lenses that don't have any coatings on them. And they tend to work the best for this kind of photography. But that is a very narrow niche of the ultraviolet stuff that's recording the actual ultraviolet light. And there are some interesting patterns and things to explore, like my my selfie that I had done for the challenge. It can work and it can be fun. But I found what was far more interesting was shooting ultraviolet fluorescence, which still uses ultraviolet light as an input. But once that light hits a subject, whether it be a flower or an insect or whatever it happens to be, a certain very small amount of that light will bounce back to the camera in the visible spectrum. And so that's what fluorescence is, where ultraviolet light or any higher energy light hits the subject and then gets absorbed and then sent back out in a lower energy form. So the UV light comes back as blues or purples or sometimes even yellows and reds. And it's really fun to see what colors things become in ultraviolet fluorescence. And that's where I've had my greatest successes, because these are really punchy, really colorful images. And it's something that you don't know what you're going to get until you try it. And there's been a lot of failures along the way, but it doesn't require a modified camera. You just use your regular camera as you would anything else. You just have to modify your flash to emit only ultraviolet light.
So on the one hand, like the two different kinds of UV photography, if I'm going to simplify it into two kinds, is UV reflectance. Is that the right term?
That's right.
And UV fluorescence. So for the reflectance, what you would do is you're basically taking available light, like the sunshine, and modifying your camera to only record what's on the UV spectrum.
That's right.
Okay. And then now if we're talking about fluorescence, now you're bringing just the UV.
Right. And so in fluorescence, you're seeing something that could never exist in nature, because the light from the sun has all the visible stuff in it as well. And so you're limiting things down to only emitting ultraviolet light, which no natural light source would do, and seeing what comes back in the visible spectrum. And so it is a really fun way to view sort of the unseen world. And I didn't know. I mean, I knew that certain minerals and things would fluoresce in ultraviolet, and I've got some of those as examples. But I had no idea that if you hit, say, like a cicada with enough ultraviolet light, its wings, which are normally transparent, will glow bright blue. And there was some really fantastic wow moments along the way exploring what would happen. And, you know, I tried different bees and wasps and things, and their wings were completely uninteresting. But cicadas and certain dragonflies, just they lit up beautifully. And
so you gave us a shot of a cicada, correct?
I did, yeah.
This is the one here, Adam. Have you seen the blue cicada?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at them right now, yeah. It's very
And in
cool.
real life, what color are those wings?
Completely transparent.
Okay, did you already say that and I just missed it?
Yes.
Okay, see, it's transparent. That's why.
That's on the dragonfly one is very cool looking too, yeah.
Yeah, the dragonfly would have transparent wings aside from the black spots that retain themselves in ultraviolet. Interestingly enough, a lot of insect eyes that are normally black or dark will glow that same shade of blue. So that kind of adds some extra depth to the image as well.
So you would tell us how you did this. Like you said the reflectance part, and so you modify your flash. How would you modify your flash so someone could do this at home?
So this is fluorescence, but so modifying the flash is pretty easy. But be careful, because you're opening up like high voltage electronics here. So when I was dealing with it, number one, you know, there are procedures for you in order to stay safe doing this if the capacitors inside the flash have any charge. But these flashes I had just bought, and so they were fresh out of the box, no charge in them at all. And these are Yongnuo 685s, I think. And there's just two screws in the back, and under the little rubber circles in the side, there's some little metal clamps. Pop off the top of the flash and take out two pieces of plastic that are in between the flash bulb and sort of the outside world. And so you've got a clear view then from the xenon flash tube all the way out. And this becomes a full spectrum flash because those pieces of plastic block ultraviolet light. And then you just tape on filters on the outside of the flash that block the visible spectrum but let the ultraviolet spectrum through. And so the total modification takes me about 5 minutes or so to do. It's just getting the right filters in order to block every bit of the visible spectrum, because these flashes, I got three of them, they are at point blank range to the subject and they're firing at 100% power output, full power. And I'm typically shooting at anywhere between ISO 4000 and 8000 in order to get the shot to work. So there is very little that fluoresces. And it takes it to the extremes.
Now, and obviously in order to shoot this, you'd have to shoot it in complete darkness.
Well, I mean, not complete. There could be a little bit of dim light. The way you test it is take a test shot with the flashes off at the same exposure settings, and if it's completely black, then you know you're not going to get any interference from whatever ambient light that you have around. But yeah, I blacked out the windows in my studio, and I try to make sure that you don't have any contamination there.
So the one that I find, like, well, they're all fantastic, but the one I find interesting from like the scientific part of it is the flower, where you then have a four up picture, you have four flowers in one.
Yeah, and that was a really fun one, because that was some species of sunflower that was being sold at the local supermarket. And I knew sunflowers would have sort of a bullseye effect in ultraviolet reflectance. That's what insects see. And so that's in the bottom right, I think. And so that actually turned out quite nice in ultraviolet reflectance, one of my best. The middle on the bottom is just plain old ordinary, what you can see with your own eyes. And the other one along the bottom is in infrared, where you often lose detail and there's no color separations anymore whatsoever. But the magical one, the big one in that setup, is the fluorescence, where the pollen in the center of the flower is glowing and making it sort of like sprinkled with stardust right in the center of that. And that, to me, is the winning shot of the four.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That I mean, it's amazing. You know, obviously we don't see that. We see the yellow flower. Never occurred to me about the someone's directing traffic for the insects.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the dragonfly photo by far the best, in my opinion. It's kind of like eye candy, is that photo. Just the pink flower below the wings. And, I mean, you instantly know what everything is, but you've not seen anything quite like it. That's kind of the wow photo for me. So there you go, Don. Next coin, next year, dragonfly.
Well, you know, the dragonfly one was one of the hardest ones to do in the series, because this is done in studio, and dragonflies are non-cooperative. The spiders, you can kind of coax them around and poke them, and they'll climb on a stick and whatever. But the dragonfly, there's no way I could get them into the studio without doing something that some people might consider to be unethical. People draw the line in different places. But this dragonfly, I caught him outside, and then he spent about 3 minutes in my freezer in order to just cool him down and make him sort of docile, so that I could just take him out, place him on the flower where he stood for about, I don't know, 30 seconds to a minute. And that's when I made the shot. And then he started flying around the studio, so I had to grab him in the net and put him back outside. So there was no other way for me to take the image than to do that. Dragonflies are, like I said, non-cooperative. But I'd like your opinion on that. Where would you draw the line?
I'm calling PETA right now.
PETA.
Do they have that for?
No, they're big listeners. PETA's big listeners, and so my message to PETA is: move on. Find something more important to deal with. Yeah, this is not an issue.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm all good with everything there.
Yeah, the dragonfly. If you ask the dragonfly, he might feel differently. But that's assuming he speaks English. We don't know.
Actually, it is a female.
She's famous now, though. So you know, people would do a lot worse to be famous.
Plus, I think this might make it on the poster for the Silence of the Lambs reboot.
Maybe.
Yeah. No,
it does. Now that you say that, it totally does. Yeah.
I was thinking. I had a former neighbor that I still keep in touch with that does a lot of stained glass work, and I think that would be an absolutely wonderful template for a stained glass sculpture.
Ah, yeah, good call.
Sure. Yeah.
Good call. So now let's say we just want to we don't want to modify our cameras to shoot reflectance. We don't want to modify our flashes to shoot fluorescence. Can we just fake this in Lightroom?
Not really. You can't really. I suppose you could in some ways if you knew exactly what the output was supposed to be.
Right.
But the same is true of faking infrared. You know, if you've got a field of, you know, grass or whatever, and you've got a green truck in that grass, in infrared, the green truck might be very dark and the green grass might become very, very bright. It's impossible to predict exactly where it's going to be when you fake it in post, especially when you get patterns showing up in flowers. That's the sort of delicate detail that unless you know exactly what it's supposed to be, there's no way to replicate it.
And nor should you. I was just being facetious there. I don't want to replicate this. I think what I like about this, Don, is that on the surface, just you say to me and maybe to Adam too, you say, yeah, UV photography. I don't really need to know anymore. It's not on the surface, it's not piquing my interest. It's not in my wheelhouse. It's got nothing to do with me. And then I see these shots and think, wow, like these are really fantastic. So now my interest is piqued and I want to know more, but I'm probably not going to get into this.
Well, the flashes cost me about $500 for the flash itself, which is about like $95, plus the filters that go on the front of it, which are the more costly expense there. And so $500, I mean, that's what you would spend for a Canon speedlight, right? And this is for a dedicated piece of photography. And yes, I've got to buy three of them in order to get enough light, but there are other ways about it. If I had just one, I could shoot longer exposures in complete utter darkness and then just pop the flash off multiple times. Now, that wouldn't work for some of the, you know, the insects that might be moving, but it would work perfectly fine for some of the more static subjects like the flowers. And so a $500 expense in order to get into a totally new area of photography that you've never explored, that's actually pretty inexpensive.
I agree. Adam, you doing it?
No,
I'm not going to do it, but to me, that's the compliment.
I think it's fascinating, yeah, and I'm totally with you in a sense that, but I also don't really like the pictures that I like. In my opinion, like I love the insect ones, the flower ones don't really do anything for me. But that's the case with a lot of macro flower photography. I just not something I'm interested in. So the subject matter I really like here is the insects, and now we're talking about macro lenses as well, all of which I've not gotten into. So now it's a much bigger expense to go down this road rather than just the light. I've not delved into the macro either. So for me, this is still a fair distance away from anything that I would do personally, but super cool, super interesting. If someone dropped off on my doorstep some macro lenses and some modified flashes, I'd be all over it.
Well, Adam, interestingly enough that you mentioned macro lenses, most of these images were not taken with a macro lens.
Really?
Yeah. So I've got a Trioplan 100 from Meyer Optic that a lot of these images were taken with, not because it's the right lens to do it with, but because my regular macro gear is too magnified and I needed something a little bit less. And so just a good 100mm lens with extension tubes on it will be the ticket to get you into the range that a lot of these shots were taken with. And I would have used my Canon 24-105, but I think that one's taken too many bumps and scrapes along the past few years. And it's really soft sort of on one side, so it's just completely out of calibration, and it would cost too much to get that fixed compared to what it's worth. So this Trioplan 100 stop down is actually a pretty sharp lens. You know, for an optical formula that was, you know, originally, I think it was 1916 when it was first used. So it's a classic and it works. Just throw some extension tubes on it and you get the best of everything. One of the shots, though, it's got a spider in it with some glowing blue flowers. That was done with a 24mm lens with extension tubes. Partly for the perspective, but also because the wider angle would give me more in focus in any given shot. And so I intentionally used a wider angle lens and cropped in on it, knowing that I would only get one shot and there's no tricky focus stacking or anything involved.
Hear that, okay. Adam? No excuse, buddy.
Yeah but still.
Oh, that's great, Don. So we're going to post these photos on our site, but where can people go to find more of your photos?
So you can find a whole archive of my ultraviolet stuff, including stuff that is non-natural fluorescence. Like I've got invisible inks and highlighter inks and all sorts of fluorescent powders and stuff that can make for some fun experiments photographically. And so on my website at donkom.ca, donkom.ca, there's an ultraviolet category, and you can go and check out. And there's write-ups that go along with every image and shows you how they came to be. So check me out there.
And we'll post a link there and follow Don on Twitter and all the social media places, the usual, the Instagram.
I'm there as well.
There as well. All right. Just a reminder to everybody, monthly challenge for October is fall colors. Nothing to do with UV unless you wanted to, Adam. I mean, I'm assuming Adam's going to do a UV shot for next photo challenge.
Yep.
Fully committed. But the challenge for next week, Adam... I got one. Don't worry. You don't have to, you know, halfway it with one here.
Okay. What is it?
It's to do with the fall colors. However, it's more specific. This one's going to be a fall portrait.
Okay.
That's the photo challenge for next week. But fall colors for the monthly. That's it for this week. Websites. Go to doncom.ca. Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
You can find mine at alanatridge.com and the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.